Welcome back to the S4IN Changemakers podcast, the place where we explore the innovators, pioneers, and disruptors who change the energy systems of today and tomorrow. In this episode, we are diving into how to unlock small flexibilities at the edge of the grid. And our guest today is someone who embodies this mission on every level. Sandra Trittin, co-founder and chief growth officer at Bebop AI, a global leader in decentralized flexibility management, aggregating small flexibilities such as home batteries, smart meters, and heat pumps. And we will hear lots of this later. And Sandra is not only a serial entrepreneur in the energy tech space, but also a thought leader and advisor with more than 15 years of experience across the new energy ecosystem. Sandra, we are thrilled to have you here. Welcome to the podcast.
Thank you so much. And thank you for having me, Thea, and really looking forward to that session.
Let's dive into the first question then, Sandra. I had to start with a tagline on your LinkedIn profile when I was preparing for this podcast. Queen of Flexibility. Tell us the story behind that and how did you end up focusing on flexibility?
Yeah, probably to quickly start with the second part on how I ended up in flexibility. I actually come from the telecom space. So I worked for more than 10 years in the telecom space in Switzerland. And at one point in time, the question was on how can we as a telecom company provide more services than just the communication line for utilities, and how can we dive deeper into the energy industry? And this is where we developed the first technology platform and business model for this aggregation of small-scale distributed energy resources. And how I got to that queen of flexibility, I actually didn't invent that myself, but it was invented by a newspaper in Sweden. Because once I stepped onto the board of Quantum Heat Pump Technologies, they gave me that name in the press release.
I love it.
So this is how I got to that name, probably because I'm working on that topic since 15 years, as you mentioned at the beginning. So this is how it came up.
And I think it's more than well deserved, and we get to that, of course, today. Why? Yeah, besides that tagline, you talk about, especially talk about human-centered energy or
yes,
the human side of change. What does it mean? What can you take us there a little bit to your approach to things?
Yes, so how that actually came was that coming from telecoms, it's already quite tech-focused. Then stepping into energy, I also focused a lot on technology, how to build up platforms, how to build up connections, about algorithms, optimization. And whenever I try to explain to my family, for example, my mom, especially the older generations, on what I'm doing, and I tried to explain it to her from a tech angle, she got really puzzled. And after three sentences, she was like, yeah, I somehow get it, but you could see it in her eyes that probably not fully. And then you try that again and again and again, and you see it just doesn't work, right? Because you're in a deep tech, giggy language, which doesn't work. So what I started at one point in time was trying to translate that more into a language that people would understand. And especially people who are not dealing with energy at all. And that helped a lot. And this is about this humanizing energy. We always have to keep the end customer in mind and the people we want to reach with our technology, and have to pick them up at the status where they are, in the mindset that they are, and communicate in a way that they can understand.
Mm. That's a perfect bridge to Bebop AI, your company. How would you translate or explain what you do to someone outside the energy industry?
It's a bit still tech related, but how I explain it is we are connecting different types of assets in consumer homes or in commercial settings, like storage, solar, wall boxes, heat pumps, cooling assets. We connect them all to a platform where we are able on one side to monitor the assets, but also able to control the assets. And out of that, we can forecast the behavior of these devices for tomorrow, for example. And we know when the heat pump will run, when there is a high probability that the car will be charged. Now, we are able to aggregate this information out of thousands and millions of assets and provide that to the different energy markets. So it can be for energy trading or for grid stability. And by providing that information, we get a feedback from the grid, for example, that there is a bottleneck tomorrow at 1 o'clock, where there is not enough energy available or too much energy, for example, putting the grid under stress, and there needs to be a deload. And then we take that signal and we distribute it back to all the single homes, still keeping all the comfort requirements of each individual in mind, and considering that there is always enough hot water, there is always enough storage in the battery, etc.
Mm. And is that what you just explained, the gap that Bebop closes in the market?
Exactly. So we are providing that technology platform, which enables all of that. So if you take it more in an energy language, downstream, we connect over cloud to the assets. We are able to monitor the assets, do the forecasting of demand and production profiles. We forecast flexibility, and then we aggregate that all into one tradable unit and integrate it either for trading markets or for the grid services, depending on where it should be monetized.
Interesting. So this makes your company unique, I think, in comparison also to other offerings? Or would mm-hmm. you say there was something similar? Or what would you point out is especially unique or innovative?
So there are other companies around that, and it's great to see, right? Because over the 15 years, there have been a lot of companies growing in that space. What makes us unique is, on one side, that we consider the optimization of the devices and their behavior on one side behind the meter, which means locally for the customer. But we also take that into consideration when bringing that in front of the meter, meaning once we optimize it for trading or grid services. And that's important to have that as an integrated element, because you want to consider the constraints of the customer. And on the other side, you want to maximize the monetization on the markets. So that's one part. The second part is what we call a closed loop control. So we are always, let's say, monitoring and aggregating the information of the devices continuously. Because if you do a forecast now, how the pool of devices is going to behave, and you provide that as a forecast for the trading, probably something has changed already in the meanwhile in that pool, right? So you need to have always the feedback loop, what is changing, to be able to rearrange that pool and to rearrange the capacity in that pool, but still being as reliable as a normal power plant to the trader, because they are used to have that in that way. And then the third speciality is, it's all around technology, right? There are many platforms out there. Everyone is having the best platform, the cheapest platform, the fastest platform, the most efficient platform. But it's not only about building the technology, but leveraging it and using it in the right manner. And there are many more questions around these platforms, like how do I onboard customers? How do I market the service to the customer? How do I take control as a utility or grid operator of that platform, right? How do I leverage the pool? How do I best integrate it into the trading systems? Who is taking care of the customer support? Which questions are raised by the customer? Even down to the tariff design and to the product marketing of the utility. And this is where Bebop delivers a full all-in-one package. And this makes us unique so that you do not only profit from the technology, but you get all the services needed around it as well to implement it.
So you manage quite a huge amount of complexity. Can you also do that when you talk about grid operators and customer trading systems and so on? Can you do that in different markets with different regulations? Can you connect them all, or where are you active?
No, so it has to be actually, because it's a software as a service business, right? And that needs to scale to be valuable and to deliver enough value, not only to the industry, but also to investors. And therefore, it has to be built up, and it is built up in a way that you can implement it globally to different market designs. So the market design is one part of the input parameter into the platform. And the platform is therefore able to deal with the different market requirements, market regulations. And we are active across quite a numerous number of countries across Europe, but also in the US meanwhile, and just entering into Australia.
Wow. So lots of countries, and scaling up is an awesome buzzword. So that would be an interest of mine. What has been perhaps the most surprising or change-making learning on the journey with Bebop so far when scaling up or entering new markets, or when you entered the company, you founded the company?
The most positive or negative?
I think both. If you already mentioned both, I'm curious about both.
Okay. So, but that's a personal, that's really a personal opinion. For me, the most surprising is, in a positive way, the team, the commitment of the team, the willingness to move all together forward. Because as founders, you start to build up your team, you have something in mind, but you never know if it really works out in that way. And that's a nice surprise that it's that way. Because it's the team who makes all of that happen, and how that works together, that's just amazing. On the more challenging side, I'm still surprised, even though flexibility is a huge buzzword, that it still takes so much time to enter into different kind of markets. It's already much quicker than a few years earlier, but it still takes its time. And I was hoping to have it a bit quicker, but I think that's normal.
Yeah, I think so. Flexibility is definitely a paradigm shift in the energy systems. And it takes time to convince people to move forward from their old way of producing and consuming energy to a more decentralized view. So let's move a little bit from your perspective as a founder and from Bebop to a more broader a view on flexibilities, as we just tackled that topic. So why is it crucial to manage and optimize tiny to smaller flexibilities that can be found in households or elsewhere, just to get the bigger picture?
The number of these assets is growing, right? So it's with regards to electrification, there's now quite a few regulations out there who let's say, give advice at least that on new builds, there should be always solar systems built. There is a huge tendency also in electrification of heating, for example, with quite some regulations away from gas. Transport is getting more and more electrified. And what that means is that the original energy system is a bit like put upside down. Because beforehand you had the generation, and the generation got its target for the next days on how the profile for generation would look like. And then the energy was sent through, and on the other side you had the consumers. But now what's happening with all of this electrification is that many of the consumers now on one side become producers as well. So through the solar systems. So it goes also from the other side into the network or into the energy system. And also the consumption profiles are changing quite rapidly. And up to now, it was not possible to really monitor that or to see what's going on. As one example, many of the grid operators are still working with the standard load profiles, where they have a standard forecast of your demand depending on your setup at home. So let's say it's a four-person family home. And then in that area, they have the forecast for these type of customer segment, which looks the same for everyone. Now, once you put a solar system on your roof or you drive an electric car, which is also getting charged at home, it doesn't fit into that standard load profile anymore. So the first thing that is really necessary to be done is to get transparency on what's going on in your grid, but also what is going on in your balancing group if you look at it from a trading perspective. And so you see, for example, in some countries that the balancing group management, for example, gets turned fully upside down because it's difficult to forecast solar production and it's not reflected in their balancing group optimization and driving then much higher costs than before. So once you get transparency and you're able to forecast properly, then it also makes sense to take control because you want to avoid to pay fines, for example, or to pay for your imbalances too much. So there is a high need on transparency, forecasting, and then controlling the assets.
So when you got all that, these aspects managed and have worked around a way to solve that or to offer that, it's a bit provocative, but does it even pay off to work with small household flexibilities then? Because there are so many aspects to think about it. Or why bother with tiny assets when large industrial companies could offer more flexibility? I know Bebop is... helping with that, but I think that's perhaps interesting to just get the perspective right on that.
Yeah, so it's a valid question, right? Because you can say, well, on an industrial load, for example, I have probably higher connection costs, but then I also have a much higher capacity to deal with, right?
Mm-hmm.
The first thing is that luckily now, thanks to all the API connections to the assets and to the manufacturer clouds, the connection is getting much easier to these assets, right? There is no need for hardware or anything. Over cloud, it's a small project and you are connected all of a sudden to all of the assets which belong to one manufacturer once you're on that cloud. At least you have the capability on doing so. Connection costs are really minor for these small assets. Now, if you look at the capacity per asset, for sure, home storage is much less than if you take a steam heater in a big industrial company. But the steam heater has quite some restrictions on how you can leverage it. And normally that depends on the production processes or on the processing in general of these industrial companies. And it does not give you a lot of flexibility that you can change that behavior a lot, right? So it has quite a regular rhythm in which you can use that asset, which on one side is huge at that moment, but it doesn't allow you to move it somewhere else. And that's a bit different with the small loads, let's say, or production units. Because you can move them much easier in time. I like to give that example of a heat pump. You can easily stop each heat pump, I would say, in Europe by 1 hour per day, and no one is going to realize that, potentially on the bill at the end of the month. But because of the heating inertia and the inertia within the building, there is no impact. So if you do that now with 1,000 of heat pumps, you can have the same impact than a big industrial load. But the beauty is you can even move it in time much more than if you control that one big scale unit. And then there is always the argument, it's there anyway, right? So it's being built. So why not leveraging it? And especially that point of transparency is not only helpful for providing flexibility, but just on managing your system much better. So you need that transparency anyway. So why not taking it that one step further to take control?
And thinking about that now, what would you reckon are the biggest challenges to manage those decentralized, small-scale flexibilities? And of course, in contrast, what are the key success factors to making the small flexibilities that are there, as you said, work at scale so that you can really harvest their output?
I would like to take it from the angle of the key success factors, actually. So one element is you need to have access to them, right? So you need the manufacturers giving you access to their API, and then the API needs to allow you also technically to get the data, but also to take control. So this is essential. I think it's getting more and more standardized. I would not talk that there is a standard. I also not sure if there is a need for a standard, but it needs to be accessible in whichever kind of way over the cloud. So that's one part. Then the second question is always, okay, now I can connect the asset, but how do I convince the customer? And there's one success factor which everyone normally needs at the beginning is you need to build up the business case. And there's always the question around how much value can be derived with that flexibility of the small scale assets. So I think there should be always the first step on getting that business case right. And this is also something that we always do with Bebop, that we do a first calculation of the potential revenues that can be derived out of that flexibility. Then once you have the business case, then the second question is like, okay, now we know how big the cake of revenue is. How do we distribute that cake? Right? Because the utility or the grid company wants to have something. The customer should have something. Probably you need to convince an installer who should take that on the offering with him as well. So then it's around product design or tariff design, which is crucial also to maximize on one side the flexibility that can be leveraged, and on the other side to make it as attractive as possible to the customer to convince him to sign up. Mm-hmm. And the third part or the last part in the end is the most important key success factor is the willingness to take some risk and just to get going, because there is everything that is needed, right? The technology is there, the supportive elements are there, communication can be supported on, but at one point in time, you need to jump into the water, right? You need to decide and you need to get going. And I think that's one of the most important key success factors for these programs.
So when I imagine I'm your company listening now to our episode, talking about those key success factors, can I actually build on those, what you just said, with a business case, how to distribute the cake, and the product design and the technology that is given, a profitable and scalable business? Is that the way to go?
Yes.
Or would you say, no, there's a different approach, but basically you have to get these points right and then you can scale your tiny units of flexibility?
Exactly. I mean, once you have that start off, right? So once you do the value calculation, you do your product design in a way that it works and think about how to acquire the customer. Mm-hmm. The platform is easily taken into place and putting into operations. And then we work always together with our customers supporting them also in the operations, in maintenance, deriving also knowledge transfer, right, which is also important. We don't have to make many mistakes twice. One time is enough. And then it's about getting into scale mm-hmm. and driving that up in the market and on the customer base.
Yeah, I think especially the customer base in your human-centered energy view is very important. I think this is something I want to close the circle to the yes. beginning of my questions or the introduction. You position Bebop as a platform that benefits both the grid and the consumers. You just stated yeah. obviously some key successful success factors and profits that profit from. But how do you ensure customers trust their devices are controlled in a way that benefits them and the system or the end, like customer, because you are
yeah.
working with utilities and others that have their households that they manage?
So in the end, from Bebop's side, we are a technology platform enabling the utilities or the solution providers in the market, right? Or manufacturers. And to a certain extent, it's also their decision on how they want to remunerate the client. We can give them options on how to do that. And there are different options that we have also seen in the past with some of the players in the market. So to give you two extreme examples, on one side, you can have a flat rate to the customer and you can just say, you pay X euros per month, flat rate, no question, nothing. But for that in the background, you allow the utility or the grid operator to steer your devices as needed. Then normally the risk sits fully with the utility or grid operator, right? Because the customer will be only willing to pay that fixed amount per month and not more and not less. You can have the opposite and just say, like, dear customer, you stay with your tariff, whatever you have today. And then if there is something on top at the end of the year, you might get a bonus of X euros, which might not be as attractive to the customer because he will have to sign up still to the program. He might fear out of the control. So it might not be as attractive to get a huge customer base connected. And then it depends on the partner from us where to find the middle path. And it's quite interesting because it depends a little bit on the culture, like in which culture we work in. So, for example, it's not always the same if you talk to a German customer than to a French customer than to an Italian customer, like end consumer. It's also about which types of assets are under control and what do you need to bring also as a trust feature, let's say, to the customer that he's willing to provide you access. So there are quite a few components coming together that need to be considered in that solution design or product design to the end customer. But which is the exciting part, right? On seeing what will work best in the end on that specific customer base and on this specific customer segment.
So there are lots of perspectives to keep in mind when marketing small flexibilities. Let's take a brief look because we already had so many interesting aspects today about small flexibilities beyond Germany and Switzerland. What do other countries or other foreign companies do to solve and manage smaller flexibilities? Because I think that other countries such as the Netherlands and Italy are quite or more successful than we are in Germany in regards to smart meter rollouts and all these sort of things. What do you reckon?
Yeah, I mean, there is for sure many differences across, even across Europe. And you are pointing out one critical element, which is the smart meter. there's a lot going on in communication currently about how to drive the smart meter adoption and rollout, especially in Germany, higher up. That's for sure an advantage that many other countries are already having. But it's also, again, a bit the difference in regulation, like what can you do, which markets can you enter with small-scale flexibility? That also looks quite different, for example, and is much more limited still in Italy than it is, for example, in Belgium or in the Nordic countries. And coming to the Nordic countries, for example, there's much more drive on dynamic tariffs, as one example, to drive flexibility or to steer flexibility than you would have, for example, in Germany or Switzerland, which is also a bit due to the regulation and to the market design, but also coming back to the customer on which types of product the customer is really reacting on and what he's willing to go for and what not.
We are coming to an end of our podcast, but one question before the last question, I'm super interested in one word or one sentence. Okay, that's a challenge. What will the smaller flexibility market look like in 10 years in Germany, Switzerland, or Europe?
I would say it's present everywhere and existing. So,
looking forward to that, to drive it and optimize it. I think what the energy transition needs.
Exactly.
And finally, because that's the question all of our podcast interview guests get, who is your change maker, for instance, in the energy world or elsewhere?
My biggest change maker is my husband.
Oh.
Because not because it's my husband, but it's the capability of driving change in different industries and adapting to the setup in different industries, always applying, let's say, a bit the same way of thinking, but just being able to get your mind into the different setups and then driving that forward.
Perfect. Thank you for the great insights. And I hope our dear listeners also enjoyed this episode as much as I did. Thank you, Sandra.
Yeah, thank you as well, Thea, and happy to see you soon.